This week on Buffy the Gilmore Slayer.
We get it, Amy. We get it. We figured out your code. We cracked it. Hello and welcome to Buffy the Gilmore Slayer. I'm Brian Morris.
I'm Stacey Kulo, and we're both comedians.
And a couple.
And I just watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer, one of Brian's favorite shows, for the very first time.
And I just watched Gilmore Girls, one of Stacey's favorite shows, for the very first time.
We watched both shows together, all seven seasons, comparing them as we went.
And now, we're watching and comparing two other shows from the same creators of our favorite shows, Joss Whedon's Firefly
and Amy Sherman-Palladino's Bunheads.
And this week, we're discussing episode two of both shows, starting with Firefly, The Train Job.
As well as Bunheads for Fanny. Oh boy. Did you get teared up at Bunheads?
Girl, why you gotta tell the world if I get teared up at some girl show?
I did. I didn't know if you did. I didn't check your eyes.
I'm super masculine, okay? I was working out, and that was sweat. Sweat coming out of my eyes.
You were sitting on the couch like the rest of us.
I was doing couch crunches.
The rest of us is mostly just me, but Kurt was briefly there. He did check out part of Firefly. He came and sat between us and just, like, relaxed and watched the show.
Yeah, but then he was like, this is too woke for me. Our cat's super conservative.
It is. We have made that a quality of his for some reason.
Yeah, I've decided he's ultra conservative for some reason.
Also gay.
Yeah, so he's torn.
Yeah, then he had to go to work. By work, we mean he goes into this little cubby where we have this, like, white fuzzy blanket that he needs.
He needs and needs. Like, he...
like, he makes biscuits on it. Every couple days, he's got to go to work, and that's his office.
Purrs super loud. It echoes. It's great. We love him. But back to shows.
Yeah, but I wasn't expecting to get all choked up at the end.
Well, I mean, I wasn't either. Who knew what was going to happen in this episode?
There is a big similarity this week between both shows.
Yeah.
Amy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mitchum returns.
He returns in full force.
Greg Henry, the actor that plays Mitchum Hunsberger, is apparently just in Bunheads. He's definitely going to be back, it seems. Yeah. But he was a guest star, at least, in Firefly. I don't know if we'll see him again there, but...
I doubt we will, but it was like... Yeah. Are you serious? He's in both shows.
I think I knew he was going to be in Bunheads at some point. I looked at the list of Gilmore people, but I forgot and also didn't know we'd see him today.
But there he was. Classic Mitchum in both shows. Very not Mitchum at all.
Actually. Neither was Mitchum. Especially Bunheads is a big departure from Mitchum.
Yeah, I mean, I would say even Firefly was pretty different, but yeah.
Yeah.
Bunheads, it's clear Amy's like, you're a completely different character now.
Smoke some pot. Get out there.
So before we get into shows, I guess we should talk about what's going on with us.
We are broken
40.
Up. Oh.
Oh, shit. I didn't know. Did you send me a letter?
Yeah.
Oh, you did. It's notarized. That's nice. Oh, I'm sad, though.
You turned 40. It was good. We did like a 4-day birthday thing for you. Apparently, when your birthday is on a Friday and you work, you get the whole weekend as your birthday and the Thursday.
Yeah. I didn't try to turn all those into birthday celebrations, to be fair. We just happened to that Thursday hold our Blood in the Clock Tower game. It's just... the first Thursday of the month,
yeah.
And our friend decided to make it a big deal and make me wear dollar store happy birthday jewelry.
And he got you like a cookie cake and he sang to you.
It was fun. We had a lot of people come out just for the event, not just for mm-hmm. my birthday, but just to play the game. So we had to have two games going at once. And we were taking up like a ton of room at this bar, more than we ever had, and kind of blocking the bathrooms. And the owner like came up to me and was like, hey, Brian, can I talk to you for a minute? And I was like, oh, shit. We like did too much. Like, she's going to be mad for taking up all the space. She's like, yeah, Brian, I was wondering if I could have some of your cookies. It's like, yeah, okay, you could have some of my birthday cookies. But then Friday I worked. I mean, Friday wasn't really my birthday. You bought me dinner.
Friday was your birthday. That was your actual birthday.
It was my actual birthday, but I worked. It was kind of like, I don't care enough. Saturday, I got a ton of my friends together, and we just played that Blood in the Clock Tower game we've mentioned about a dozen times on this podcast. And it was a great time. I had a very, very good time.
Yeah, it was really fun. I'm glad so many people came out and made your birthday special.
Yeah.
Oh, and then Sunday we had a watch party, and we watched birthday episodes of Buffy and Gilmore Girls.
That's
right. So you
got
4 whole days of birthday.
One other thing happened. We went to go see American Fiction yesterday. Very excited about it. We buy tickets ahead of time. We reserve our seats.
Our train is all messed up, so we have to, like, take a bus to get to our train.
And then Stacy, like, ruins her ankle on her way over there.
I get, like, caught in the revolving train door as our train is coming.
The only reason I mention that, it's not Stacy's fault at all. Not a big deal. It was a big deal for you because it was painful. But, I mean, like, nothing to be upset with you about. But we missed a train, so we had to wait for a while for a train, and we were already, like, dealing with terrible train situations.
We were, like, cutting it close already, but this was definitely going to make us get there, like, after the previews, right as the movie's starting.
We get there literally as the movie's starting, and we go over to our seats. Sure enough, there's two people in our seats, and we're like, hey, you're in our seats, hoping they're, you know, they had maybe closer seats and just sort of decided to take these, and we're like, these are our seats, and they say, oh, well, the staff moved us here because some other woman had a walker and needed our seats. And we look over and there is an old woman with like a walker or something, but she seems to be sitting with her friend. And so we're like, all right, we don't want to like make a scene at this theater. So we just leave and go to the staff and we're like, hey, we explain they were told to move to our seats. It seems weird that a staff member would move people to sold seats. Like that doesn't seem like something that would happen. So after about, I don't know, fucking forever, they decide to go in there and talk to the people. At this point, I don't even want to do this, but the only seats available are, like, up front, and I don't want to sit up front.
Yeah, it's, like, the second row. It's probably where the old ladies were supposed to sit.
So she, and like, goes and, like, whisper talks to them and then comes back and is like, oh, they moved for some other people who moved for some other people who moved for some other people. She's like, too many to move. We'll get you free seats. You have to sit up front. So we do. I don't like it. It's whatever. But it's just this thing where it's like, what, do people not understand that, like, this reserved seats?
It's just, like, the second time we've been wronged by an old woman at a movie recently.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying that, like, lady, like, if you needed special seats, then that's the ones you reserve. You don't just show up and go, actually, I'll be taking those. Like, you gotta figure it
they
out.
They may have been sold out, because we were, like, our seats were in, like, the row that has room for, like, wheelchairs and stuff.
Yeah.
And that was all sold out, except the ones on the end that we picked. So they may have gotten there late and needed those. I don't know.
If they're not available, not available. You don't just go in and be like, hey, I know you reserve these, but like, you're not going to sit there. You have to sit up in these shitty seats because I would prefer to have these seats. Well, it's like, well, then you look at the theater. You see there's nowhere to sit. You go to a different showing. You don't fuck somebody else's day up.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to make a scene at the theater being like, hey, guys, you got to move. It's just like, how about everyone just sits where they reserved? The end. I essentially just wanted to be like, why did someone tell some people to sit in sold seats? That seems like the stupidest thing for an employee to do. When the manager finally like comes, it's like at this point, the movie's been going on a while. And I say to her, like, you know, I don't want you to kick some old lady out of the theater, you know, or like make her move to, it's like that's, she's got a walker. It's a whole thing. And the movie's playing. But she still went and talked to them. And it was just like, I just wish none of this had happened.
Yeah. But we got free tickets to go see a fancy movie.
A fancy movie.
Yeah. Like our pass only gets us to standard movies, but this one would get us into the kind where the seats move and the screen's real big.
So I am excited about that. And I don't begrudge this old lady. I don't know. I feel bad, especially if she needed special seats. But can we just like explain to people how seats work at theaters if anyone's buying tickets?
Also, if anybody saw American Fiction, let us know what happened in the first 10 minutes because we missed most of it.
Okay. Now I feel like a bad person.
Well, we're going to get into shows here. A lot of you seem really excited about the Bunheads Firefly matchup. I'm glad you're sticking with us and watching these shows with us. So far, so good for both, I think.
Yeah.
A couple of people asked if we're going to change the title. I think just for keeping our audience sake, it makes sense to keep the same podcast title and platform and everything. But we did get a comment on Spotify from Baked Baker saying, I'm so looking forward to Fire Buns or Head Fly. The podcast will still be titled what it is, but you may call this project Firebuns if you like.
Someone at home is like, yes, Firebuns.
We should also talk a little bit about the Firefly episode order situation.
Yeah.
So we are watching it on Hulu, where it is correct. I believe if you look at it on Wikipedia, the order is correct. And by correct, I mean the order Joss intended it to be aired in.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at IMDb, it is in the order it was actually aired in on Fox. The episode we talked about last time is, like, towards the end. This train job episode we're talking about was the actual first airing episode of Firefly. So we're going in Joss's order, not what IMDb says.
We're going in the order that was intended by Joss, like you said, but also that you will find, if you try to stream it now, this will be the order it's in.
Yeah, yeah. Or if it's on, like, a DVD or something, I think this is the order. Just if you're trying to follow along.
Okay.
It's trash time.
God damn. Throwing away his bricks and glass. He makes both and then disposes them simultaneously.
God, we'll get him on here someday. What do you do down there, man? What are you making? But yes, don't look at IMDb if you're trying to watch Firefly. All right, should we dive in?
Let's dive in. So this week we started with Firefly. Stacey, please give us a quick summary of The Train Job.
Sure. So The Train Job is about the Firefly crew, you know, needing money like always. So they take a job where they do a train heist and it doesn't go as planned.
No, it would be funny if it did just go perfectly.
So fun fact, this episode was the actual pilot. Like, this is what aired first. And I don't know at what point Fox was like, this is going to be the pilot, make this the pilot, and they had time to adjust in the writing, or if they just, like, aired this first and everything was shot. Let us know if you know. But this works as a pilot, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, the other pilot that we talked about last time probably definitely has a lot more information about the characters and why they're here, but this one has quick little tidbits of exposition all over the place for anybody that's just tuning in. Like, I think this works as the first episode. It's exciting. It lets us know what's going on.
I get why they did it this way, because I think for someone who already thinks Joss is a good writer and is willing to tune in because it's Joss's show, you're going to like the first episode. And it's a better pilot as far as giving you information and setting up the story. But if you're just like clicking through shows or you don't know anything about Joss Whedon and you're just like, what's this show? This one's going to be like faster. It's going to get your attention. It's easier to follow.
It's funnier.
It's funnier. It's shorter. I get it.
I think that Nathan Fillion's character comes across more likable in this episode as well.
Yeah, totally.
Like, he's funnier. He's a little more charming. In the first episode that we watched last time, it seemed like there was a lot of distrust of him. Like, oh, maybe he's not quite the right person we all want to be following. But this, it seems like he's a good dude.
Yeah, he just seems a lot angrier in the pilot for good reason, but it's just much easier to like him just watching this episode.
So I'm not sure if this was originally meant to be part of this episode to kind of remind people what's going on, or if this was tacked on because it's the pilot. But the character Shepard does like a little once in every generation, there's a slayer. Like, there's a little there's like a little narration to like remind us what's going on. Basically, like, Earth is used up. I think that's exactly what they say. So, like, yeah, everybody found a new galaxy. So we're in this new part of space now, like 500 years later, where things are bad. And, like, this group of people decided to become the government. And not everybody likes it. It's hard out here. And some people don't like the government. But if you got a ship, you can get around and figure things out on your own.
Yeah.
Letting us know this Serenity spaceship is this crew of nomads in this hard world, and they don't like the government.
If I'm being honest, it seems a little slapdash put together. So did Buffy's, though, if I'm being real.
Yeah.
Especially for the first couple seasons. Every generation, there's a slayer. Here's the plot of the whole show. Now go, 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 go.
Yeah, but I mean, it was helpful.
I agree.
We didn't get all that information in one little concise moment in the pilot. It was kind of all trickled out.
Mm-hmm.
So it opens at a bar where Malcolm, I think, is the captain's name.
Yep.
You know now? Malcolm and Jasmine are having some drinks.
Jasmine is not her name. That's her character's name from Buffy.
It's actually her character name from Angel.
Okay, that is correct. But I think we could both agree it's the same universe. So if she were to show up on Buffy, she would have the same name.
Okay, that's fair. People tend to reuse actors, though. So
that is fair. That is fair. She would probably be a totally different character.
But her name in this is Zoe.
Zoe.
They're at a bar. There's a very drunk dude making a speech about how excited he is that it's Unification Day, which I think was the dawn of this government 6 years ago. We're celebrating the anniversary of everyone coming together, and he freaking hates the people that hate the government.
He calls them brown coats, which is the rebels, I guess, the people that were fighting against it. And if you remember the flashback, they were wearing brown coats when they were fighting.
Yeah, he hates those people. He doesn't like that they're in his bar. He calls Nathan Fillion a coward and a piss pot. Because Nathan Fillion kind of goes up to this guy just to sort of be near him and cause trouble. But he calls him a coward, and Nathan Fillion's like, say that to my face. He does. He starts to get in his face. He's like, oh, I didn't actually need you to say it again. I was just trying to get her behind you. So now Zoe's behind him. They start a bar fight.
Well, what's funny, too, is that Zoe seems to be like, Captain, don't do this. But then she's the one that, like, at the end of the day, starts the fight.
Yeah.
She, like, is the one that punches him.
Oh, yeah, Jane is also there, but he's, like, in the back just chilling in the booth. He's like, no, I'm not going to be part of this.
He ends up part of it, but...
Yeah. So they get into, like, a big bar fight. They get kicked out of the bar all the way to, like, the cliff that's right outside.
I mean, they get beat up out of the bar, and they're literally up against a cliff, which is funny because earlier they were referencing how Malcolm lives his life, and he's like, yeah, I live on the edge. And then, like, 2 minutes later, he's literally on the edge of a cliff.
Yeah. But... their ship comes up from the ravine and they climb aboard saying, oh, you better not try to stop us or we'll shoot you with our ship cannons. And then they get on the ship and Jane's like, they're so stupid. They think the ship has guns. It doesn't. It should. I don't know why it doesn't, but it doesn't. So they're off to space. Meanwhile, River, the girl who woke up from her cryogenic sleep in the last episode, smuggled aboard by her handsome doctor brother, Simon.
That's his full name. Handsome doctor brother Simon.
She is having some flashbacks of medical torture. We learned in the last episode that she was really smart, got sent to this academy, but they just were like maybe doing bad stuff to her. So he rescued her. But again, this kind of lets us know all that, that she's come from somewhere that wasn't good. Like we get all that information in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if the network was like, write this episode so it could be a pilot or if it just kind of worked and they used this one. Because Joss like happened to be like, well, if anybody missed that one, we'll throw some of that in this one.
Yeah, hard to say.
Shepard kind of confronts the captain. He wants to know why he's transporting fugitives, but he's not really telling them. That's kind of something they're discussing this whole episode. Not the whole episode, but they kind of bring that up. Like, does the captain have an intention for keeping these people aboard? It's suggested at the end, like, maybe he will sell this girl when the time is right if they need to, or like turn her in if it benefits them.
Yeah, Jane says that he thinks the captain has a plan for that girl, and it's maybe to sell her at some point or use her as leverage or something.
Yeah.
Jane also, we should take a step back to talk about Jane. Jane is clearly like maybe a sociopath. He may not be a sociopath, but he's definitely like selfish, in it for himself kind of person who has no qualms about killing. He won't kill just for no reason because he understands consequences, I believe. But I think he's, you know, he's a mercenary. Whoever pays him the most money, he'll do it. He's kind of like Bronn from Game of Thrones.
Sure, yeah.
Where he's like, yeah, I'll kill somebody if you pay me enough, like whatever. And so, but he also mentions that he knows the captain's smart. I think he does respect the captain. And he thinks the captain probably thinks like him. And he's like, yeah, this girl's worth something to us alive. And then we're not just helping her out of the good of our heart. That's his perspective anyway.
They don't know her yet. I'm sure they'll get to know her and her personality and they'll all be friends and they won't want to sell her by the end. We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, they don't. She could be a Terminator, man. That's a very good joke.
Why?
Because she plays a Terminator in the Terminator TV show.
Well, I didn't even know there was a Terminator TV show.
It's not good. And she's in it. It's a little sexy.
The captain is trying to ask Shepard, like, well, what are you doing here? He doesn't really know.
Yeah, Shepard also asks him about, you know, why do you have us on board? We don't give you much money. Like, you make so much more money from the stuff that you do. Captain's like, don't worry about it. Also, you're welcome aboard my ship, but your God's not.
Yeah.
The show has made it clear that Malcolm is not a fan of God. He doesn't want God involved. I mean, I think it's one of those things where since he lost that war, he's sort of like, oh, God must not be real, or God doesn't give a shit, because why would he let this happen?
Which, again, we learned in the other pilot because he had a little cross necklace in the beginning, but he clearly has a line later in that episode where he's, like, not into what Shepard's doing with his life.
But he doesn't seem to hate Shepard, but he's just like, yeah, but don't bring up God.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Inara, the professional companion, is what they call her, she is brushing Kaylee's hair. Malcolm walks in on this. He's all like, what are you doing? We ain't beauty parlor. Get back to work. I don't know. It's not what he says, but...
Great impression, though.
That's the gist. There's some jokes here. This was all pretty funny. But he's there to tell Inara that they've took this job, but they don't know that she'll be safe, so she should just not be a part of it. I don't really know why this job in particular is not safe for her, but...
Well, because they're working with a real scumbag dude.
But, like, is Kaylee safe? He didn't tell her to watch out.
Well, I would say two things. One, Kaylee doesn't have a shuttle she can use to just do her own thing. And also, he's not secretly in love with Kaylee.
Yeah. That is also made clear in the scene. It was clear, I thought, in the pilot, there was a couple little hints of it. But in this episode, I think they make it clear that there's, like, some sexual tension between him and Inara, at least on his end.
Yeah.
He asks if she'll do his hair next, and she's like, get out of here, you. Again, not an exact quote. So they go to meet this creepy old man. Is he maybe like German? He gives off some kind of like evil European vibe.
Yeah, I think it's just like generic evil European.
Okay.
Definitely this guy probably visits the hostel situation.
It's just like this super old dude who lets him know what the details of this job are. He's like, by the way, we also like murder and torture people and hang them upside down in this closet when we're done with them if they don't do things how I want them.
Well, they open the door to his like apartment and or his like office. And there's just like a giant dude there with a knife.
Yeah.
Part of me is like, knives are not as scary as guns as far as like if you want to like win a fight. And this dude is like, listen, I'd love you to do this thing for me. You might have heard my reputation that I'm like a mass murderer, psychopath that like does terrible things to people that double cross me. But look in this freezer and you'll see that that's all true. They open a freezer, just a dude hanging on a hook. And he's like, yeah, just don't double cross me. Everything's great. Not even double cross, like get the job done or bad things will happen.
The mission is they are to retrieve two boxes of Alliance goods. We don't know what's in them. They don't want to know. From a train. They're supposed to get on the train, get these goods off, and then get them to a predetermined location where they'll get the money. They do get some money in advance. Inara and Shepard have a little moment where Shepard's like, I just feel kind of useless. Like, what am I supposed to do on the ship? Kind of like, honestly, Michelle in Bunheads.
Mm.
She doesn't know what she's supposed to do. She finds a way to help. But he decides that he's going to pray for him, even though Malcolm doesn't want that. But Inara's like, well, he doesn't need to know. So do you think he did pray for him? They didn't really go back to that.
Yeah, she also suggests that she prays for him.
Does she have the same religion? Is there just one religion?
I don't know that there's just one religion. But, you know, you don't have to follow. Some people have just very nebulous religious beliefs.
Like fanny flowers?
Yes, exactly. I think this one was just to let us know that she cares for the captain, even though she doesn't tell or show him.
Yeah.
So Zoe and Malcolm get on the train. Mm-hmm. They're pretending to be husband and wife. If anyone asks, it's a good cover story.
That's usually the story I tell people.
Then I correct them.
No. She's wrong.
We're also here to steal some shit.
But they learn that there's some feds on the train. They're like, uh-oh, that wasn't part of the plan. It's time to go steal the goods. What if we get caught?
Malcolm's excited about this, though. He's all like, I don't care. This actually makes it more fun because I like stealing from feds. They go to the back to start their stealing. Meanwhile, on the ship, there's a funny line where Shepard asks Kaylee what they're doing. And she's prepping Jane for, like, his part of the job. And she's like, oh, crime.
Yeah. That's like a Buffy line.
Totally Buffy jaw speak.
Doing crime.
She's like, what are we doing? Crime. Oh, crime. Good. That was very funny.
Yeah, she's supposed to, like, lower Jane down onto the train because he's going to, like, get the goods and bring them back up to the ship.
Mm-hmm.
This is where he tells them that they could all be rich if they just turned in this guy's sister, River.
Yeah.
But she's, like, up in the rafters listening to all this, of course. At some point, she says mal, bad, in, like, Latin and Spanish, M-A-L, short for Malcolm, means bad. So she's just, like, connecting that. A lot of what she says is kind of, like, nonsense. But she does seem to have, like, some kind of intuition that they're maybe in danger.
A few things that we haven't really talked about that were sort of shown is that there's a line of dialogue from Inara to Kaylee about how Kaylee has a thing for the doctor. They're setting up a romance there. The doctor is also set up that his sister is, like, sometimes totally fine and sometimes just crazy talking. And he just doesn't know how to help her exactly.
Yeah.
Jane has also made it clear that he's not a fan of the doctor or the girl, which will come into play later.
So it's heist time.
Jane jumps down from the spaceship onto the train. Inside, Malcolm and Zoe have, like, taken the roof off somehow. They hand him the goods, but then the feds come in. A smoke bomb goes off, but there's some shooting. Jane gets shot in the leg. They knock out the fed. They make a point of not killing him because Joss wants these people to be heroes. But Jane gets back to the ship, but he's shot. The doctor's there, so he's able to take care of them. They have the goods, and they have to leave. The spaceship takes off with the goods to meet up with them later. Malcolm and Zoe pretend that they're just passengers again. They get past the guard who they knocked out, and they just pretend to be regular passengers. So then the train stops at the next town, which, by the way, is called Paradiso.
Interesting.
Connection.
The town in Bunheads is called Paradise, Amy.
We get it, Amy. We get it. We figured out your code. We cracked it. And at this town, they're now interrogating all the passengers to see who may have stolen these goods. So now that's what we have. We have the ship with the goods, a shot Jane, and the rest of the crew trying to figure out how they can get back and save Zoe and Malcolm and Zoe pretending they're a newlywed couple trying to avoid suspicion while they're interrogating all the people on the train.
It becomes quickly apparent that everyone in this town is very ill, and the stuff that they just stole was medicine for everyone. And they're like, oh shit, what did we do? So the local sheriff, played by Mitchum Huntsberger.
It's Mitchum Huntsberger playing. It's not the actor.
Is interrogating various people that got off the train, specifically these two that we see.
So Mitchum, that's what we're going to call him. I know he's got a different name. I know the actor is different, but it's Mitchum.
I don't know what his name is in this. I think it's Sheriff.
Sheriff Mitchum. Sheriff Mitchum is not like the Mitchum that we know. He's like a good guy who's trying to like do the right thing. He's got the confidence of Mitchum, but he doesn't seem, he's not a mean dude.
It is interesting, though, because we like these people. We don't want them to get in trouble. So yeah, he does kind of feel like the bad guy. But you're
yeah,
right.
But he's
not
doing it for a good reason. It's sort of like, well, when Zoe and Mal find out this was medicine that they stole, suddenly they're like, shit, we made a mistake. Like, we're the bad guys, really.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why, yeah, Mitchum is like an obstacle, but he's not the bad guy. In fact, they have a scene of him smoking a cigarette, and he gives the cigarette to a guy who's like currently incarcerated.
Which is odd because they're all dying of like a disease they caught in the mines.
Right.
Like, maybe don't smoke.
But I think that point was to say that, you know, he's not above people that he locks up either.
Yes.
Doesn't have like a complex like that.
Just to elaborate a little more, though, the people in this town, we learned from Sheriff Mitchum, it's like a mining city. They're very poor. The mine is like the big job for everyone to get because they're lying and saying they're a couple. They're moving here. They're looking for work. He tells them they could work in the mines, but you should know it will eventually like kill you. Like, I don't even work in the mines and I'm sick. There is this treatment, this medicine, but like it's hard to get. And now we don't fucking have it. So did you take it?
Right. And they're like, no, they have a story about how they're coming here. They know their uncle knows a guy and they say the guy's name. He's like, that's weird because that guy like just shot himself dead the other day. I thought it was pretty funny. There's a pause and then Malcolm's like, was his job open?
Meanwhile, on the ship, Jane is getting antsy. He wants to just leave with the goods and get the money. And everyone's like, no, we gotta fucking rescue them. Especially the pilot, whose name I still don't know. Alan Tudyk. Because he's like, my wife's down there.
I think it's Walsh.
Walsh?
I think so.
Okay. He's like, we're not leaving without them. What are you talking about? Jane keeps saying he's in charge when the captain's not on the ship. Which people are like, what? When has that been the rule? He says it like a couple times.
Yeah.
He's the leader. So I don't know that that is established lore by the crew.
To be fair to Jane, he's not just like, I want the money, fuck those other guys. He's like, if we don't give the guy his thing, he's going to murder us. Remember Meat Hooks? Like, we need to get him his cargo.
River starts singing a little song to herself about all this. This is one of those moments where she seems a little crazy. Jane has a funny line. He's like, you know what the chain of command is? The chain I go get to beat you with until you know what the chain of command is.
Well, I think it says until you know I'm in charge.
Oh, yeah, maybe that was it.
But then Jane just passes out because
he's like in the middle of a monologue.
He starts going crazy. It's so funny. He's like, oh, don't even try getting all bendy on me and lifted up by the light of the council. And it's so pretty. And starts like grabbing at stuff that's not there.
The pilot's like, did he just go crazy and fall asleep?
The doctor drugged him because he was being too crazy.
I thought briefly that he had like caught the mining sickness from like the brief time he was on the planet. And that was going to be a whole thing. No, the doctor drugged him. So they send Inara in to go get Malcolm and Zoe, which she does by just, you know, being herself. But like, because she's this like very fancy companion, they assume she like is wealthy and powerful. I guess she maybe is, but like, I'm just surprised that this works.
Well, I mean, it makes sense to me that like all these people are just like dirt poor people on an outer planet, you know, they're just desperate to survive. And this person comes who's got her own shuttle and she's got like an entourage and she's like probably got because they said they ran her background.
Mm-hmm.
Mitchum's like assistant said she ran a background check and she came back clean. So she's coming. It's not just like some woman walks in and she's like, I am who I say I am. They're like, no, she's like a very fancy prostitute.
I don't know who her main clientele is, but we've seen her with like a cop. So she may be a companion to the government.
Well, I think she's an independent, but she says she chooses her own clients, which would indicate that she's pretty, like, high up, although they all have to do that. So she just walks in. She's like, that guy's actually my slave. It's funny because she ruins their cover immediately. She like walks in and she looks at Zoe and she's like, what would your husband think? Which is like, fuck.
Yeah, because they're like, what do? We were lying. Do we still lie?
But then she's like, these are essentially her like indentured servants who had escaped. And that's why their story sounded fishy to Mitchum. It's because it was a bad story. And Mitchum just lets them go. And we get that line where it's like, we checked their background. She's clean. She is who she says she is. Not the kind of woman who's coming in to steal medical supplies. She can afford her own.
Right.
And she takes them out of there. We should also say there's this quick scene of the Federation, which is not what they're called.
The Alliance?
The Star Trek Federation just is like, should we check in on them? No? Okay. But the Alliance is like, hey, a bunch of medical supplies were stolen. We don't care. Like, essentially, it's too much. We just don't. They'll be fine.
Yeah.
So it again shows us how much they don't give a shit about the little people that they demanded that they rule over, and they're not even going to help them.
But then the old man's goon shows up.
The Claw Man.
Malcolm's like, well, the deal's off because we don't want to actually steal these medical supplies. Here's the money you gave us. He's like, yeah, no, that's not how it works. We're going to kill you because that's what we do. I just wrote fight Jane Schutz. Is there more you want to say?
No, we have a fight scene. If I'm being real, I love the show Firefly, but I feel like this scene is real dumb. So the guys just, like, show up in the back of their ship. They're like, oh, you didn't show up to the rendezvous. We're going to kill you now. I'm like, you're announcing everything. The element of surprise is gone. They could have, like, guns in here pointed at you. You know what I mean? Like, there could be a million traps they've set up. You're showing up on their ship, and some of you don't have guns. Big dude's just got a weird bent knife.
Yeah.
It's like you don't have a huge advantage here. He just chucks the knife right at Malcolm. It goes into him. But automatically, it's like, dude, if you're only weapon in a sci-fi situation is a bent knife, you need to be like super proficient with that bent knife. You know what I mean? Like, you got to be throwing that between the eyes every time. He just hits Malcolm in the shoulder. He's fine. They get into a gunfight that the good guys just win real quick. So
they've got this guy, like, you know, restrained somewhat, and they're like, okay, here's your money back. Go tell your boss we're not doing this. He's like, prepare to be hunted forever. And they're like, yeah, no. And they just kind of kick him into, like, their jet engine.
Yeah.
And he's all gone. And then the next guy, they're like, all right, go tell your boss he can have his money back. He's like, yeah, no problem. I'm going to do that. I'm not going in the rocket engine.
That's very funny. I liked it a lot. I like it especially because they don't even, like, get to the sentence. He's like, oh, yeah, no, what you said made sense. We're all on the same page.
So they go to drop off the cargo. I don't exactly know if they called the sheriff.
They didn't. Their plan was to go drop the cargo off right outside town, get into space, and then like call, be like, hey, your cargo's there. You can't get us. But Mitchum, you know Mitchum. He always plans ahead.
Mm-hmm.
He's there with all his business partners. Some of this is not true. Mitchum and the other sheriffs like find them. They're like, yeah, we heard there was a spaceship coming out here. We see that you're stealing medical supplies now. They see that none of the medical supplies were stolen. It's clear to them that Malcolm was returning them. He like immediately figures out everything. He's like, you needed a job. You didn't look too close. Then you figured out that you were stealing from innocent people. I get it.
Yeah. He like references their conversation before. He's like, you can take a job with not understanding it. But then like once you learn more about the situation, AKA the mining disease, then you have a choice if you want to take that job. And Malcolm's like, no, I don't actually think I do have a choice.
Meaning like he would never, it's just, he wouldn't do something that evil.
Yeah.
So I think that was like Malcolm's like, all right, you guys are good people. Like that prisoner I gave a cigarette to, you're not bad people. So I'm just going to let you go. He takes the medical stuff back. They go back to their ship. It's all great. We also maybe left this out. Someone's going to get killed, but then Jane shoots him. But he's like very drugged out. Malcolm's like, nice shot. And Jane's like, I was aiming for his head.
Oh, yeah, because he's just like all drugged out, like with like a pulled mouth up in like the rafters, just kind of helping out a little. So at the end, the doctor is patching up Malcolm because he got stabbed in the shoulder. It was kind of funny because he was like acting all tough. He's like, yeah, I get stabbed all the time, but it doesn't hurt. And then he's just out of nowhere. He's like, ow.
Careful.
He's getting stitches. He asks Dr. Handsome Simon how his sister's doing. He's like, oh, she's pretty crazy, but we'll figure it out. And then we get one last quick scene where the Alliance is having a little meeting talking about how they're looking for this girl.
Yeah, it's the same guy from before who, like, did not give a shit about those medical supplies. And then there's just, like, two dudes there who, they do that cop thing where one dude's just sort of staring off at a wall for no reason so he can dramatically turn around. It's just one of the things, like, what are you doing right now, man? Why are you just staring at nothing when someone walks in the room? They both have rubber gloves on, which is a little creepy.
Yeah, why are they all wearing gloves?
Yeah, I don't know.
They surgeons too?
They turn around and they're like, we're looking for this girl.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, and then the episode lets us know it's done. So, Stacey, did you like this episode?
Yeah, it was good. It was like a lot simpler than the first one. Not that the first one was like hard to follow, but I feel like the first one took me a little bit to get into because it was just like all set up.
Yeah, totally.
Where this one was like, no, I know who these people are already. We're doing a thing of the week. But like it also functioned pretty well for someone that's maybe not seen the first episode.
Yeah, I feel like Firefly doesn't do Monster of the Week like Buffy does, but it definitely does like Heist Western of cliche of the week.
Mm-hmm. But no, it was good. I think I maybe liked this one more.
I think so too.
The last episode had good moments. Like there was a lot of drama and reveals and twists in the first one that this one didn't necessarily have.
But this one had a lot more Joss Whedon jokes at a faster clip. The pilot had them, but this is just like a lot faster in this episode.
I know the first one was structured more like a movie, but this felt like more like a show I'd want to tune into every week. Like this format of show.
Yeah. I like this episode too. I think this is a good show. And I have to say, like, for the budget, I feel like it looks pretty good. It's funny if you compare it to shows that are modern. It does seem a little bit, it almost seems like a late 90s show as far as, like, the effects or, like, the costuming or set design.
I was thinking that. Like, it feels kind of 80s almost in points. Like, the lighting when they're, like, on the planets and stuff feels very Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah. This is an older show, obviously, and this is a TV show budget on the first season. I think they do a very good job with what they have. But it's one of those things that's like, huh, that's interesting. This seems like a set sometimes.
The CGI actually does look decent.
Yes.
Like, I mean, the train was clearly like a CGI thing and the spaceship flying alongside the train. But I feel like that's just how things looked in 2002. Like, I bet that's what a movie from 2002 probably looked like.
Sure.
Maybe a little better. But no, I'm enjoying it so far. Anything else?
No, I don't think so. But rewatching it, I've said this already, but I like this show. I think it's pretty fun. It's got fun characters. I want them to dive more into the pilot and to Zoe. I feel like we're not getting a ton of them, but we're on episode two. So
I said that too. Like, I feel like we still haven't really learned anything about their personalities at all or character traits other than he flies the ship and she hangs out with the captain and they're married. She's a good fighter, I guess. Okay. And now for a special segment we like to call Movies One of Us Has Never Seen.
As you know, we used to use this portion of the podcast to talk about Charmed, a WB show airing around the same time as Buffy and Gilmore Girls that neither of us had ever seen.
But now we're taking turns making our partner explain what they think happened in a movie that they've never seen, based only on the title and very little other information.
This week, I have chosen a movie I think Stacey has not seen. Stacey, have you ever seen the movie Moontrap?
No.
Well, as you know, the way we play this game is Stacey has three questions she can ask about the movie. Do you want to ask some questions?
Okay, yeah. What year did it come out?
1988.
Oh, shit. Who's the most famous actor in it?
Bruce Campbell.
Interesting. What's the genre?
Sci-fi action.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to give you one more piece of information because there's another actor who I don't think is as famous as Bruce Campbell, but maybe is, and you probably know this person. So the actor.
Greg Henry.
It's Walter Koenig. He played Chekhov in the original Star Trek series.
No, that doesn't help me.
Okay.
I mean, I'm aware, but I. Good to know.
He was also in Picard as a voice, so.
Great. So, there is an imminent alien invasion to Earth. They're coming. They've got it on the sensors. Beep, boop, boop, boop. Alien invasion.
Is that
imminent.
Our sensors getting the aliens, or the aliens have us on the sensors?
That's the sound the sensors are making.
Okay.
And they just, that's not a sound the sensors make.
But whose sensors are these, again?
The NASA.
Okay, got it.
I should have asked if this was set in the future or present day. It's present day. Alien invasion imminent. So they're like, what do we do? Let's set a moon trap. So NASA creates a mission. No, NASA doesn't know what to do. There's this guy that has been, you know, independently practicing science and he's got an idea. So he gets together a ragtag group of people to create a moon trap. where they're going to lure the aliens to the moon and study them and, if necessary, murder them there.
I just want to say that I love you so much. Mm-hmm. I really do. You're so... I love your brain. Go ahead.
Is this right so far?
Yeah, yeah. It's perfectly correct so far.
What am I missing? So, obviously, some things go wrong.
Right.
Like, there's a lot of goofy antics. There's, like, a montage where they're prepping to do all this. Mm-hmm. And they lose some men in the process. It's not that goofy. It's pretty intense. But it's pretty low budge. So, like, it is a little goofy. This isn't a good movie. They lose a guy in, like, a gravity accident. And they lose a guy. They lose a woman.
Oh, wow.
In a... they just learn women can't go to the moon. Like, the boobs, the gravity, it doesn't work. That's not science that was in the writing. I mean, it's a little like... Yeah.
No, actually, that's science. Boobs in zero-G don't work. Like, it's... They don't work.
Bruce Campbell really wanted boobs on the moon to see what that would look like. But they're like, it can't. The uterus upside down? No, thank you.
Wait. So Bruce Campbell is like, we should send a lady to the moon because I want to see what boobs look like on the moon. And they're like, no, boobs don't work on the moon because the uterus upside down is bad.
Both things, the boobs and the uterus, it's too much. It just isn't good.
There isn't really an upside down in space, but I got you. I guess on the moon, but right. And on the moon, you need to be upside down.
Again, this movie is notoriously panned for this,
right.
For this comment. Like, this is not science. It was a sexist thing that happened in the movie.
The NASA scientists were like, yeah, makes sense.
No, it wasn't NASA. This was the ragtag.
Okay. You're right. You said NASA didn't know what to do.
Chekhov dude plays the, like, old man who's been doing science in his barn. And then he gets these people together that go to the moon. Okay, so the aliens do come. The trap barely works, but they have, like, magnets that suck the ship down to the moon. Turns out the aliens were just Bruce Campbell from the future.
Because
they, when we find out, like, some future science that this group does when they're done with the moon thing, they go to the future to, not the future, but they, like, send a probe with, like, them in it to, like, tell any aliens what's up with Earth, and now they're coming back, and you know what I mean?
It's like, no, I'm very lost in what the plot is right now. Could you try to streamline that again one more time?
One of those.
Because I thought it was Bruce Campbell from the future, but now there are aliens. Okay.
They thought it was aliens, but it's not. It's just Bruce Campbell and other people, only men from this crew,
right.
That go to the future to find aliens.
Right.
But they come back and they're different now and they talk different. And they're kind of beep, boop, beep, boop, beep.
Right. They sound like sensors that are malfunctioning. Right.
And the message is, you know, just love each other.
Wait, but hold on. Earth. So the trap gets Bruce Campbell from the future?
Yeah.
He's not aware of the trap that he set for himself?
He is. He is. Okay. Which is why it works. It shouldn't have worked. It was very bad. NASA's plan was better.
Okay. I just want to point out, honey. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of weird similarities and parallel plot devices from your description of Moontrap with time travel and Star Trek The Voyage Home, which also stars Walter Koenig. I guess he probably knew how to do this, right? That's the justification?
Yeah, and I haven't really seen that, so it's pure coincidence. I guess I'm aware that that's a thing. Is that the one with the dad from Seventh Heaven?
I don't know who the dad from Seventh Heaven is, so I have no idea.
Oh, well... that's good. But there's one where there's like a man on the bridge and they're like watching something float on the screen.
Wow, you're really narrowing it down to one specific Star Trek episode. There's a man on the bridge watching some stuff in space, you know.
A man that's not usually there. That's the dad from Seventh Heaven.
This is the one, I don't think so, because they're not on the Enterprise in this one. They take a Klingon ship into the past to go find a whale.
Oh, this is the whale one.
This is the whale one.
Okay. Well, has not influenced my review of this movie.
Okay.
Can I be done now?
Well, okay. Well, that is the fucking plot. That's insane. Wow. I'm impressed.
What actually happened in the movie?
Okay. I'll do a quick synopsis for you if you'd prefer.
Mm.
NASA finds remains of an ancient humanoid race on the moon that left behind deadly robots.
Okay, well, see, it was an ancient race. It was former humans, and NASA was involved.
It wasn't former humans.
So there's robots?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what was the trap?
Well, apparently it was going to the moon was a trap. These aliens were there. We uncovered them. And it's very much like the movie Virus, but like not on a boat. It's on the moon.
Also haven't seen that. Maybe we'll do that one next time.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a good movie?
No, but we got to watch it. It's I mean, as a child, you have to understand, as like a 16-year-old kid who loved sci-fi, loved horrors, loved Evil Dead. I loved Bruce Campbell as a kid. Watching him now, sometimes, especially later in his acting career, when he sort of becomes this like dumb idiot, masculine dude, like it's kind of cringy to know that I like liked him at some point. But I saw this movie. It's like aliens, Bruce Campbell, robots. You're going to love it. It wasn't that great.
Is he silly and over the top in it?
Yeah, he's silly and over the top. Well, he's not like, I mean, I don't remember. It's been so long since I've seen this movie. I don't think he was like cartoony, but I mean, he was overacting.
Are there women on the moon?
There is. In fact, there is a woman on the moon from the previous race that had these robots.
Okay, but not like sent by NASA.
No, you can't go to the moon. Women, boobs, and uteri don't work in the on.
So
on
I the got moon. That part right. No, that's there's just, no women in the mission.
That's just science.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This other woman can because she's from a previous race, a different race.
Right. Well, sounds like I was pretty close.
Yeah, except for a lot of the plot. this has been movies one of us has never seen.
So then we watched Bunheads. Brian, give us a quick summary of For Fanny.
So this episode is dealing with the aftermath of finding out that Hubble died. And Fanny, his mother, like trying to deal with her grief, sort of excluding Michelle. And Michelle trying to figure out how she can deal with her grief and how she can be helpful and included. It's also about the town dealing with the grief, too.
Oh, yeah. We get a lot more of the town.
Yes. So we get a quick recap of what happened last episode where this Vegas dancer who's a little bit over the hill. She's not like over the hill, but as far as dancers are concerned, she's kind of aged out of like being a professional dancer anymore. She gives in to this guy, marries him, Hubble, who whisks her away to his town, Paradise, to live with her and take care of her. She's not in love with him, but she comes to the realization that maybe she could fall in love with him. She has a rocky start with the mother, but then she like kind of has a heart-to-heart with the mother over some booze, and they start dancing together like, maybe we can get along. Maybe we can make this work. But then Hubble goes driving, looking for them, crashes, and dies. And his crush, or the woman that had a crush on him, rather, truly, like shows up at the bar to be like, yeah, Hubble's dead.
By the way, we do get opening credits this time.
Yeah, they're very quick.
Very brief. It's just like images of dancers and Michelle with like the title. There's not even like actual credits of actors. It's still over the first scene, but we get a little jingle.
So this episode picks up pretty much right away after that. Fanny and Michelle come home. There's not a lot of talking.
Yeah, Fanny just kind of comes in and starts shutting off the lights and goes to bed.
Sort of starts cleaning up a little bit.
Yeah. Michelle starts like going through Hubble's stuff to try to figure out like who the heck was this guy.
Yeah, it's kind of sweet. She like finds a Metallica t-shirt and sort of like smiles, which is nice because it's like you'd think he wouldn't be that kind of guy, but when he was younger, he was into Metallica.
We found out he was 48.
Yeah. Also, they're just playing a ton of Lalas for all this. It's just Lala. It's Gilmore Girls, but they like change the tone a little bit.
I should look it up, but it's got to be the same singer that sings the Gilmore Girl Lala music.
Amy's just like, I like one. What's a lot? What is that? Is that a note?
It's a note to follow. So, yeah.
Amy's just like, La is my favorite musical note. We'll be using exclusively that in all of my shows.
Did you get my reference?
Yes, I did get your reference.
Cool, cool, cool. Yeah, I mean, it's from The Sound of Music. I don't know that it's actual musical note. Musical notes are A, B, C, D, E, F, G. But
La.
Yeah, La. It's a syllable.
Then it cuts to the next day where those girls we met, the young girls who are the ballet dancers or students of Fanny, they are sitting out at gym. They're not attending gym because one of them has cramps. And also they have a note from their ballet instructor saying if they're injured at all, that'll ruin their career so they can't participate.
I feel like that wouldn't be news to their gym teacher.
Yeah, it was probably for us, you know?
Yeah.
Couple things about this. I'm trying to get their names straight. You guys know I'm bad with names. We have Sasha. She's the mean one.
Mm-hmm.
We have Melanie. She's the one who's bad at communicating with her eyes. More on that later.
And she has brown hair.
Those are her two traits. Then we have Boo, which is clearly the character we're supposed to care about. Like the most empathetic character on the show. And then their other friend who we don't see right away in the scene.
I don't remember her name. The shorter blonde one. The one from Maisel.
Yeah, I can't think of her name. The blonde one shows up and breaks the news that they died. There's a funny bit. I didn't find it funny at first, but I did find it funny later. Where she's like, Hubble went for a drive and then... And like she like makes eyes like something happened. She does it twice. All the other girls are like, oh my God, he died. But the one girl with the brown hair.
Melanie.
Melanie's like, I don't understand what you're doing. Like, what is this eye thing? And eventually she gets it.
Like, they don't want to say the word dead. They're just like, and he
does like eyebrows up. But it's a running bit where Melody, throughout the whole episode, keeps trying to communicate with her eyes the same way, and like no one understands her. And it's actually very funny because she gets very upset later, and Sasha's like, you can't do it, okay? Stop trying. You have other gifts. I really like that line. You have other gifts.
We also get like another implication that Sasha's dad is gay. Like she's talking about how her parents are going to buy her a car because she like walked in on them fighting about their some servant of
like
theirs.
A pool boy or something.
Yeah. Got caught with her dad. Some kind of fondue pot.
Yeah. Also, we should mention Boo is not here for this. I did mention Boo, but she's not here for this interaction. They then go to Spanish class where Boo is taking a test. And Sasha just like rich girl privilege charms her way into being like, I think we should tell Boo what happened. So Boo gets to just not take that test. And Sasha's like, hey, Hubble died. Well, first Melody tries to do the eye thing, which no one gets.
Melanie.
Sorry, I said Melody earlier. Melanie tries to do the eye thing and Boo's like, I don't know what you're doing. They tell her, she's sad, but then they're like, this is just an excuse to go see a Mark Wahlberg movie?
We truly don't know what movie they go to see because this is set in 2012. The only movie Mark Wahlberg was in that year were Contraband and Ted. But they say he's blowing up France. They also say Selma Hayek is in it. And I don't think she's in either of those movies. We've done a little research and can't seem to figure this out. So if you know, let us know. It's possible Amy was just throwing out random names, but I feel like she wouldn't do that.
Yeah, it's so weird. I don't know. Yeah, could have been. Because she might have been like, I want this to be evergreen. And we haven't set what year it is in the show.
They do say that it's pre-2014, because at some point Michelle says, we don't want to wait till 2014 to do this.
Yeah.
So they do kind of place it in time.
So I'm torn, because they're clearly setting Sasha up to be, like, kind of a mean girl who will, like, learn her lesson at some point. You know what I mean? Kind of like Paris, in a sense. Different than Paris, but, like, the same kind of vibe where you're like, you're not perfect, but, like, you got a heart of gold somewhere in there. But it seems like she just got her out of this class not to, like, actually break the news to her, but so that they can all go to a movie.
Yeah. She's like, everyone grieves in different ways. But it does seem like they just wanted to skip school.
Yeah. And then she later lies to Boo about the time, so they're late to their ballet instruction later.
How do they go to a movie exactly? They spent a large chunk of the first episode talking about how this town does not have a movie theater.
Oh my God, you're right. So they had to, like, go to a separate town?
Which is totally possible. People have cars. I just thought it was a weird thing.
I will say this. They were super late coming back. So maybe it's justified because they had to go to an adjacent town. So it took some time. But it's I feel like they should have had a line of dialogue considering, like you said, they made a big point of saying there's no movie theater in town.
You even joked that like these girls wouldn't be very cultured or be able to do good references because there isn't a movie theater.
Right. Another part of this episode, though, is how Fanny is dealing with her son's death. She seems, at first, very, like, reasonable. Like, she's taking it very well, I feel like. A little depressed, but, like, she's like, we got to do a memorial. She says she'd rather do a memorial than a funeral because funerals are just sad, but memorials are, like, a celebration of life. And Buddhists think that you come back from the dead. So a celebration is the way to go.
This is kind of a fun scene. It's like in the morning, the next day, Fanny's just like taking everything out of the fridge because she knows people are going to start bringing like casseroles and stuff over. But Michelle doesn't really understand what she's doing. So she kind of just starts like moving fridge stuff around the kitchen too. Fanny's like, what are you doing? She's like, I don't know.
That's so funny. I don't know. But she seems not crazy scatterbrained at first.
It does seem like she's not grieving though.
I agree with that.
She's, like, staying busy to avoid being sad.
She keeps talking about having to plan this memorial, and she's got to get a tent. Then she has, like, a little DAR meeting with her friends.
Her, like, knockoff hippie DAR friends.
It's so interesting, right? Because she is playing, like, a version of Emily. Like, she's got a lot of Emily mannerisms in this, like, planning stuff. It very much seems like Emily planning an event. But it's like the opposite of the kind of shit Emily would have, you know, like looking up sitar players and like Buddhist monks to come and pray and chant. It's so interesting. She gives all of her friends these like chants they're going to have to learn. She's got off the internet. So I'm confused about whether or not Franny is actually Buddhist.
Franny.
It seems to me that what we're supposed to be reading is that she's a Buddhist, like, in name only. Like, she doesn't really know about it. It's just, like, something that sounded good to her. So she's like, yeah, that's what I do. I could be wrong, but that seems to be what we're being shown. It's pretty funny, too. Like, the things she wants to do for this memorial get more and more out of hand and ludicrous. She wants to get a big tent. First off, she's inviting the whole town and then, like, the town over. It goes from, like, 100 people to, like, 500 people are coming to this, which is, of course, 500 people aren't coming. There's not enough people in the, like, surrounding towns to make 500. That's an exaggeration. But she calls some tent company. They're like, yeah, we have white tents. She's like, I want a different color. They're like, well, we don't have it. She's like, how much to dye them? They're like, we're not dyeing tents for you. But then she wants to get cocktail napkins with, like, the Dalai Lama on them. And she, like, calls the Dalai Lama to see if he'll come to the memorial service and gets, like, a little mad that he won't. This is all stuff that Emily would definitely not have at a memorial service. But we get to meet her friends, which are all kooky. And I'm a little sad because I feel like they're not going to come back.
I don't know.
Well, the reason I say I don't think they're going to come back, and I could be wrong, is one, the show got canceled. And two, because they're listed as, like, headphones friend, Wicca friend in the X-ray on Amazon Prime.
The X-ray being the little credits that pop up at the bottom when you hit pause or whatever.
So it's like, well, if they're going to be around, they probably get named later, right?
Yeah, maybe. But there might be other little gatherings like this. Who knows?
You could be right. It just seemed like, well, they'd name them if they're going to be on the show later.
One of them, the one that's actually most featured, is Audrey from Rick Moranis' Little Shop of Horrors.
Yes. He owns that one.
That's what it's called.
Yeah, she was in the movie and she was in the stage play. So really, Rick Moranis was in her movie.
You know how I feel about women.
You're fine with women as long as they're not in space.
And that Rick Moranis has top billing.
But she plays like a Wicca. She's kind of funny. All of her friends are a little like quirky. But they start to notice that Franny's being a little crazy.
Fanny.
You're right. I've been calling her Franny a while.
Oh, just to take one step back, there was a part at the end of the scene where Fanny's clearing out the fridge. Truly walks in kind of silently with a casserole. And Michelle just kind of opens the fridge door and she puts it in. And she tells her that she blames her for Hope's death.
Yeah.
And Michelle's like, me too. It's kind of sad.
Yeah.
I mean, he was out looking for her.
Michelle is trying to figure out a way to grieve as well. She's obviously upset. Not as much as the mother, but, like, she had just thrown away her whole life to live with this guy and had just decided that maybe he was, like, worth being with. Like, this is a good decision. Like, maybe she could make this work. Because apparently they had amazing sex.
Oh, yeah.
Which is all it takes.
But she's grossed out by his penis later.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. She kind of dances by herself.
At the studio.
Yeah. And I kind of like this because she dances by herself a little bit and then she seems like she's like, oh, no, I'm like, what am I doing? But then does it again. And I feel like, no, she's, like, looking for a way to grieve.
Yeah.
But doesn't know her role.
And then the girls come in and she like hides. And this is where they're like talking about the Mark Wahlberg movie a little bit. There's one funny joke I want to mention though. They're like talking about how Hubble died. And one of them says they still haven't found his face.
Yeah, they're like, they found a shoe a mile away. I heard they haven't found his face.
So gruesome.
There's also a running bit here where Boo is very upset at her friends for like not taking this seriously enough. And, like, taking her to a movie, and she just keeps saying how they're gonna go to hell. And later in the episode, she apologizes to her friend. She's like, I'm sorry, I kept trying to scare you with hell. And then her friend's like, no, it's okay, that's what hell's for. Great line.
So Michelle's trying to figure out what her purpose is. There's another DAR meeting, or maybe it's the same one, I don't know, it's, like, later that day. And she shows up with bagels for these women. And there's now a running bit where they're like, nobody eats carbs anymore.
Yeah.
Which feels very 2012,
mm-hmm.
like a joke Amy would make in 2012. But then she leaves with her bagels. There's a funny joke by Audrey who says, she like asks if Michelle was ever a man. And they're like, no, why? She's like, I just think the town could use someone that used to be a man to go along
woman.
With the Republican and the Liza Minnelli impersonator. You know, just gathering one of each type of person.
Exactly. When she shows up at the bagels, she goes into the kitchen and Truly and Fanny are talking. Fanny tells Truly that, like, you know, he loved you so much. It was like true love. You guys were soulmates, saying all of this in front of Michelle.
Yeah, Trulia is just there cleaning up for some reason.
Yeah. So Michelle leaves upset, which makes sense. It was really shitty that Fanny did that right in front of her.
Because Trulia, like, says she wished that she could have married Hubble and, like, called her mom. And Fanny's like, you can call me mom. Yeah, so she leaves.
Yeah, she leaves. She goes for a walk. As she's walking, some dude, old man with a beard, just like, hey, you going for a walk? You want to take my dog?
Yeah, he's just like lives in a little trailer along the path. And she does. She takes the dog for a walk.
Which is like a corgi husky mix. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, it's so cute.
So she's just like sadly walking this dog. She calls her Las Vegas dancer friend back in, I don't know where they were living. I don't remember. L.A.?
In Las Vegas?
Yeah.
You just said.
Yeah. Michelle calls her old dancing friend in Las Vegas and kind of tells her what's up. Her friend says, you've got the worst luck with men. It's so bad. Your luck's so bad. And I feel like this was going to be setting up kind of a running, not, I don't know if it would be a bit, but sort of like a plot device that they could use over and over again, just like they did in Gilmore Girls, so that she could just keep having relationships that start to go somewhere and then bad luck happens and she can't get married to them. I really do feel this was like a plot thing we were setting up so that we could have an excuse why she doesn't end up with somebody until the show's over.
Oh, maybe. It just feels like, to me, the show isn't about her looking for a man. Maybe because I know it's only so many episodes, but like it seems way too soon for her to start dating.
Well, Gilmore Girls wasn't about Lorelai finding a man.
Was it not? She starts dating Max like immediately.
I suppose.
She gets engaged at the end of the first season. But yeah, I feel like this is going to be more about her figuring out what makes her happy and like what her new career is.
While I agree with you on all of that, I feel like almost every show has this will they, won't they, like romance. It's just an engaging thing, human experience we can all enjoy. But like so many shows, you can only do that so long before it's like, okay, are they together now?
Yeah.
Now we don't have that will they, won't they thing that we want. You know, we want that tension. Or are they going to make it?
No, I agree. I just feel like that maybe wouldn't be a thing that happens until season two of this show.
I don't know. I could see her starting to date someone this season towards the end of the season. And then that brings up issues with the mother. I think it was just Amy being like, I'm going to write this in to give me leniency later. That's my thought. I'm not changing it.
Okay. Guess we'll see what happens in season two.
Amy was just like, I need a scene with a very scantily clad woman. We'll just have her on the phone.
This is essentially her walking in to talk to Sugi. Like,
yeah,
we need to hear aloud how she's feeling. We've kind of seen that she feels lost, but this phone call was just to be like, here's how I feel, everyone. I don't know what I'm doing here. Things are bad.
Then Michelle just kind of stumbles into a bar that she finds, brings her dog in. It's pretty funny. Actually, some lines here are good. Mitchum is the bar owner.
Rico.
His name's Rico. And literally, Amy was like, okay, Mitchum, we're having you back. She calls him Mitchum. Everybody does. You know, that's an actor with a different name, but everyone calls him Mitchum. She's like, Mitchum, we're going to write you a character that is like literally the opposite of Mitchum. You couldn't be more different.
I love the idea that Amy had written this episode. She had this guy cast because Rico is sort of like an old surfer. He's like,
yeah, Pauly Shore was supposed to play this guy probably.
But then she watched that second episode of Firefly. She's like, no, we need Greg Henry. There's really no character for him to play. Too old to be boy ballerina. I guess he's Rico.
And when you say Greg Henry, you mean Mitchum?
Yes. We'll just make him be Rico. I know it's not a fit.
Not at all. Not even a little
he
bit.
We need a connection for Brian and Stacey to find.
He's just like, oh, man. Oh, crazy, dude. Like, just like super surfer. So different. Long hair. Just like disheveled. Keep saying man. It's like a Cheech and Chong kind of surfer guy.
You're sex at the party, girl.
Yeah. Everyone in the town heard about the sex at the party, by the way.
She like lies about her name. She says she's Sophie Tucker, which is like an old timey comedian.
For a second, I was like, shit, is that her name?
No, but he just like doesn't get the joke and believes her. I mean, I would have believed her.
Like I said, there's a bunch of funny lines here. For one, he's like, oh, is that dog a service dog? She's like, yeah, he's for when I like get too drunk and pass out and I use him as a pillow. That's what he does. Mitchum's like, all right, Rico. I'll start calling by his name, Rico.
But then his, I guess, probably wife.
He calls her his wife.
Yeah, he owns this place. He says he's owned this bar for 20 years. Is this the bar where she was with Fanny at the end of the pilot?
I don't think so. I think it's a different bar.
Okay. Because she's like lost. She gets lost walking the dog. She stumbles in here. But yeah, Nina, who seems equally California, even more so, she seems like kind of dumb, actually.
I mean, they're kind of giving me like TJ and Liz vibes.
Oh, sure. But, yeah. Like, she's the TJ.
Yeah, exactly right. I was gonna say Rico seems more nice and like empathetic than DJ was.
She comes in with like a kitchen issue. She's like, I don't know, the kitchen, man, it's making sound. It's broken. Fix it.
The whole kitchen's broken.
Something's wrong with the fryer, which like she doesn't know what to call it. So he's got to go check on that.
But a great introduction to Rico. I would love to see the same scenes with him and Logan. Just like, son, just chill out, man. Do whatever you want to do. I love the way you behave.
So Michelle starts getting phone calls from, do we ever figure out why she is getting the calls? She's like, how did you get my number? She's getting calls from like people that Fanny has spoken to about funeral arrangements.
At this point, we find out that Fanny has like decided to start meditating, but it's clear that she's like, she's exhausted herself. It's like she was just trying to do too many things and like kind of gave up on all of it. And so now those people are calling Michelle for like, what do we do? She asked for a bunch of tents. Can we bring the tents over? Stuff like that.
But we never find out how they got her number.
Correct. I don't know.
I don't think they ever say it, but somehow everyone Fanny called earlier now is calling her.
Well, if you Google sex at the party girl, you'll get a phone number.
The sitar player bit is pretty funny.
A sitar player calls, but we only get Michelle's part of the conversation, which is all like, oh, we don't need a sitar player. You don't have to play for me. No, you don't have to play for me. And then she just waits a while, clearly, while he's playing. And then
like a decent amount of time.
That's very good. No, your mother's wrong.
But later, the same guy calls Fanny and insists on playing. Same bit.
Long pause. She's like, why do you have your mother call me?
Yeah. This guy has mommy issues. It's very funny.
But then Audrey comes in, also known as Wicca Girl. And she's all like, yeah, I like want to draw, but I only draw naked.
Sculptures. She's a sculptor who makes stuff out of like found objects. So it's not even going to be like very realistic.
So she's like, I don't know what Hubble looked like naked. So she like draws him and is like, is there anything like this? And Michelle's all like, ugh. Which I'm like, you just fucked this guy and you loved it. Why are you grossed out by a naked photo of him?
Yeah, she's like, okay, grossed out by this quick drawing. So much that she leaves the bar where she's already ordered a meal that she hasn't received.
Mm-hmm.
She pays.
Well, the fryer is down, so I get it. Michelle comes back and is like, hey, I'm getting these phone calls. You got to deal with this. She interrupts Fanny's like big meditation. And Fanny starts to freak out, starts getting very upset. She's like, my son died. My heart is completely broken. My life is ruined. I'm allowed to do whatever I want. I can handle this any way I want. Like, who are you to tell me what I can't have for this or what is insane or too much for this memorial? I'll do whatever I want. And she just starts bawling. And Michelle feels terrible about this.
This was great. Like, Kelly Bishop's such a good actor. It was very reminiscent of some of her. It was a similar scene, actually, to in that episode of Richard's in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Where she's, like, trying to stay busy so she doesn't have to think about processing her husband's death, potential death. And then eventually she's just like, no, my world might end and I can't handle it. I don't know what I am without him.
Totally.
So it's a similar thing here, but she acts it very well. But Michelle's like, what can I do to help? And she's like, nothing. Why are you here? I mean, that's not what she says, but she tells her she doesn't want her help.
Fanny's like, you've known him for like 24 hours. Like, you're not going to help.
Yeah. I've been his mother for 48 years. Like, I'm going to be sad the rest of my life. What do you know about this? But I'm also like, what is Michelle supposed to do? Like, it'd be weird if she just peaced out.
Yeah, it's tough. I don't know. It's an awkward situation for everybody.
I also get that it's kind of weird for her to help plan this funeral of this man she just married.
Mm-hmm. Or say what should be happening at the funeral.
Right.
I think she does say, like, I don't know that he was Buddhist, though. So, like, why are we doing a bunch of Buddhist stuff? But then they both go out to cry. They both separate to cry.
Back at the dance studio, the girls eventually arrive. They skip the movie. They show up late.
They are just waiting for Fanny if she decides to teach. But they also don't want to leave because it's like she's grieving. Maybe she'll want to teach to like grieve. Boo has like guilted everyone with her hell speeches to stay. But they're like combing each other's hair, which is a connection.
Yes. They're like doing her hair. They're like putting it in little buns and braids and stuff. But still, it was like a girl sitting in front of another girl, just like in Firefly, getting her hair done.
Sasha's had enough. She doesn't want to wait anymore. So she goes into the house to like see what's going on with Fanny, where she spies upon Fanny just like bawling. And you can see, I feel like the actress does a good job. You could see it sort of like hit her like, oh, I don't like that. Fanny's so sad. It makes me sad.
She just leaves.
Then she finds Michelle, also very sad with a dog.
She still has the dog.
Yeah, she even says, like, I think I stole a dog.
I wonder if she'll have it. Does it have a name?
I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder if she'll, like, have it the rest of the show. He never gives it back.
Sasha's like, you got to do something.
Yeah, like, why isn't anyone doing anything? Someone should do something.
So Michelle very quickly just organizes the whole memorial. Like, very quickly. Like, to the point where it's like, really? In, like, a day you did all this?
Well, I mean, she doesn't really do much. She just starts looking for chairs. She tells the girls to start calling people.
You're right.
They all have, like, a meltdown about Mark Wahlberg. That was weird.
Yeah, they said they didn't like the movie, and, like, no one wants to see Salma Hayek in a red bra, and then, like, Michelle's like, well, I think a lot of men would disagree with that. Michelle just, like, decides, grab chairs, we're gonna do the memorial. Cut to some time later. Boo goes to Fanny and is like, hey, Fanny, what's up? Fanny's like, oh, my God, I forgot all about the ballet. I'm so sorry. Boo's like, don't worry about it. I closed up, but I can't get the water to shut off. Can you, like, come fix it?
Yeah, there's, like, a busted sink in the bathroom that only Fanny knows how to fix, which is just a trick to get her over there. We know that.
Yeah. So Fanny goes over there and is very depressed, but then sees that it's all set up really nicely with a bunch of chairs. The whole town is there. Michelle's like, I got you a chair.
Except
right
Rico.
Here. He's got to fix the fryer, man. Bro, you don't know that Rico isn't somewhere in there. And then the girls put on, like, a little dance. And I guess they taught themselves this dance. Sasha says they've been practicing, rehearsing for 3 hours.
Yeah, they choreographed it, I think. I was trying to figure out if there was, like, meaning in it. I'd have to watch it again. Because they, like, had some of the boy dancers. And I was like, is this supposed to be Emily and Hubble? Because, like, Sasha kind of came forward with a boy. And they did, like, a little bit. But there was also moments with, like, Sasha and maybe Boo, or two of the women dancers. And I was like, oh, maybe that's supposed to be, like, Michelle and Fanny. I bet there's some symbolism.
Fanny's, like, really happy and touched by the song, Tom Waits, Picture in a Frame, which was a CD in Hubble's CD player.
Yeah, Fanny's like, that's a great song. That's nice, because it must have been a song that Hubble liked if it was in a CD player.
Yeah, and, you know, you got to say, Michelle, you went out of your way to pick something that Fanny would like, because also, you know, he likes Metallica, and that might not have gone as well.
Right, and doesn't work as well with ballet, probably.
Yeah, probably. I don't know enough about ballet to tell you if that's true.
Oh, man, one of the lyrics in that song is, I'm going to love you till the wheels come off.
Yeah, and it goes on to say, like, you'll find my face one day.
I'm going to love your face off.
Well, it all seems really sweet.
This was touching, right? When did you get emotional? I got emotional when she starts walking up to the ballet studio and outside is, like, all beautifully decorated.
Yes.
And you can, like, just, you know, they're going to do something sweet in there.
This is right when I was starting to feel the burn from my crunches. And really getting sweaty at this point.
This is when Kurt went to go to work because there was a lot going on the couch.
At this point, it seems like, oh, Michelle and Fanny are patching things up. Maybe there's some hope for reconciliation, some friendship. Would you call it friendship? I don't know. Like, daughter-mothership? I don't know what you call it.
Yeah, I don't know. Sasha also asked Michelle if she's leaving. She's like, I don't know. There's still food. She's like, no, I mean, like, town. Are you leaving town? And Michelle's I haven't thought about it. But it's clear, like, Sasha doesn't maybe want her to leave.
Right. But then a guy named Jerry shows up, which was a friend of Hubble's, and I would suspect was a potential love interest for Michelle.
I don't know.
It's the only eligible man we've seen so far in the show. But he shows up. He's all like, hey, I was a great friend of Hubble. He, like, talked about you all the time. He was absolutely in love with you.
He knew your shoe size.
Yeah, which is a little weird. I feel like I could talk about a girl at, like, guys. Maybe they'd be like, she got big boobs. Like, but no guy is like, but what are her feet like?
To be fair, he sells shoes.
You're right. Okay, that makes way more sense. That makes way more sense.
But also, I'm offended.
My friends that are guys wouldn't be like, what are her boobs like either. But, I mean, it's important to know if, like, she wants to do space travel or something like that.
Yeah, then you gotta know what her boobs are like.
Exactly. But Jerry's all like, also, you know, we'll do the paperwork because he signed everything over to you in his will. Which you can tell Fanny's like, wait, what now? And it's a big shocking uh-oh moment, and we cut to black.
Well, first she just, like, starts chugging her drink.
Yeah.
Fanny and Michelle are both drinking, like, bottles of beer, which is really funny to see Emily Gilmore drinking a beer. But yeah, she just, like, starts downing her alcohol. So, yes, it seems like there's going to be a little bit of drama between Fanny and Michelle regarding this financial situation.
Is this how every episode of the show is going to go? There's going to be, like, a moment of reconciliation between Fanny and Michelle, followed by some plot twist to ruin that reconciliation?
I hope so.
I hope so too.
So, Brian, did you like this episode?
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty funny.
It was funny and touching.
Yeah.
We got moved.
I feel like a lot of shows, this show will and would have gotten better the longer it goes on because we'd meet more people and you can get laughs out of people because we already know their games, their bits, like what their character's about.
Mm-hmm.
Where in this one, like, if somebody's funny, we got to introduce them and introduce the funny thing. You know, it's not already, like, something we already know. So it was funny. It was touching. But I'm not in love with the main character yet. Like, she hasn't done anything to really make me endeared to her other than...
I mean, she did this nice thing for Fanny.
Yes, I know. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just being honest. It was funny. It was good. But, like, it didn't blow me away. I didn't think it was as strong as, like, a Gilmore Girls episode. But it's also the second episode.
Yeah, I mean, I hear that, like, up to the last part, it was sort of just, like, treading water. Like, there was a lot of just, like, cutting to the girls waiting around at the dance studio.
Mm-hmm. There was funny stuff, though. It was very funny. Like, the hell lines were funny. There was other funny stuff. It was good. The sitar player phone call was funny. Of course, I love seeing Rico Mitchum back.
I liked, we expanded the world quite a bit. Like, I looked up how many episodes he's in, so I know we'll see him again, but I'm assuming that's a location we'll go back to.
Right.
It felt like that was the plan. We got to see the girls at school. I don't know how often we'll go back there, but, like, I like that the girls are, like, a subplot, because I'm guessing it's all going to kind of come together, and it's going to be about Fanny and Michelle.
Really? I feel like it's going to be
coming together
the girls
around the dance studio.
Mm.
And these girls all have, like, some more than others have, like, plot lines and issues that they're dealing with. Like, Sasha's got this family drama, and she's going to learn to be a better person. Boo is, you know, getting more confident.
Hmm.
But yeah, I think they'll ultimately bond about needing to help these girls.
Yeah, I liked the episode. It was good. It was just, I don't feel it was quite as strong as Gilmore Girls, but also, if I compared it to Gilmore Girls episode 2, maybe I'd find them similar.
Yeah, yeah. I think the first, like, 4 episodes of Gilmore Girls are kind of just mediocre compared to where it goes.
And it's hard to get emotion out of 2 episodes. You know, like, Firefly isn't really trying to get any real emotions out of us. Mm. Maybe, like, a tinge of, like, I gotta do the right thing. But, like, not like, oh, my God, I'm so sad this girl's hurt. Like, I'm not crying at Firefly, at least not yet. But I was getting a little exhausted from my workout.
Yeah.
In this episode, which is, it's only the second episode. So you're already getting sweat from my eyes. Like, that's not nothing.
I think the acting in this episode was good.
Yeah.
Kelly Bishop, obviously. But I thought Sutton Foster did a good job. And I thought the actress that plays Sasha did a good job. She has to do a lot because she's got this, like, facade, but she has to communicate mm-hmm. that there's more going on in her mind
yeah.
without ever saying that.
So those were the 2 episodes we watched this week. Were there any similarities? Yes.
Yes.
We got hair brushing and combing.
We have characters who are feeling useless and not knowing what their place is here, Shepherd and Michelle.
We have implied dismemberment. The man who got kicked into the engine, and also Hubble. Also, I forgot a joke that was very funny in Bunheads. Sasha's talking about how Hubble had sex with Michelle, and she's like, yeah, that's probably how he died, because, like, he probably had never had sex. And then he had sex with, like, a Las Vegas stripper. It was probably way too much for him.
I think she calls her a showgirl, but she also says that Hubble was 75.
Yeah.
It's, like, such an exaggeration. But she says it like that's how old she thinks he is.
Right. Which, for someone that young, probably that's what 45 seems like.
We also had the locations having the same name.
Yep. Yep.
And, of course,
Mitchum.
There you were. Both shows. Love to see you.
I hope you're in every show I ever watch from now on, Mitchum.
We didn't really talk about the thing these girls are all, like, preparing for in Bunheads. They're all, like, you know, waiting on some big audition. So I don't know if that was dropped. That was just a pilot thing, or, like,
oh, yeah.
We had to have this episode where we grieved Hubble before we can do anything else.
I wouldn't be surprised if that doesn't come back in an episode or two.
Yeah, I think it might, but just, like, wouldn't have really made sense. I mean, they could have, like, had a line, like, oh, we really need to rehearse because of that thing coming up. Anyway, which episode do you think was better?
I think Firefly was.
Yeah, I think probably technically overall it was. But I, again, thought this was good. I enjoyed watching Bunheads.
They were doing different things. So it's, again, hard to compare because they're so different. One's a sci-fi action show. One is, like, a heartfelt comedy drama. I will say that Bunheads probably had better, not better necessarily, but more jokes that hit for me.
Yeah. Someone commented that they're a little worried Firefly is going to win every week. I'm honestly a little worried about that just because of the budget of Firefly. Like, it's doing so much more.
Totally, yeah.
Where, you know, Bunheads is just such a more cutesy, kind of on a random network. Not everybody watches show. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I don't know. I don't want to say that it could never be Firefly. I don't know. I haven't seen Firefly or Bunheads.
Yeah, I'm not going to assume that either, because I feel like Bunheads is good. It got me emotionally already. Firefly hasn't.
Yeah.
And I know not every episode of Firefly is perfect.
Yeah, and like I said, I think Firefly, we haven't really dove into all of these characters yet. Like, I don't know why I should care about the pilot or Zoe, really. So hopefully we get into a bit more character development soon.
Yeah.
Okay. If you want to watch along next time, we'll be discussing Bunheads Episode 3, Inherit the Wind.
Interesting. I'm interested in that plot already.
Why is that?
Well, because of the movie Inherit the Wind and the play Inherit the Wind.
I don't know that movie.
Well, it's a bit out of the scope of the kind of movies you watch.
Well, maybe we'll have to talk about it on a special segment.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard of it. But it's a movie and a play?
Yeah. It evolved from a play into a movie.
On its own?
Yeah, it wasn't easy. It was quite a trial to get there, but it did. Man, these are great puns.
And we'll be watching.
Inherit the Wind is a movie about the Scopes trial, which is about teaching evolution.
Oh.
We'll also be watching Firefly Episode 3, Bushwhacked, which that's like a Western name right there.
Yeah. In the meantime, we'd love to hear your thoughts on the episodes discussed in this podcast. Like, which episode of Firefly did you see first? Did you watch it live and happen to catch this episode as the pilot? Did you watch it later and watch the true Joss pilot? What do you think works better?
Did you watch this episode and then you were upset to find out there wasn't going to be more Sheriff Mitchum? What did you think of Rico when you first met him?
Which performance of Greg Henry did you enjoy more?
What do you think Michelle should have done when she found out Hubble died? Like, what would you do if you were Michelle? Let us know. You can reach out by following us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok at Gilmore Slayer, where we post interactive questions, comedy sketches, and more.
Or send us an email at brianandstacyreviews@gmail.com. That's Brian with a Y and Stacy with an EY.
For more bonus content, find us on Patreon at patreon.com/Brian and Stacy, where you can watch our video recaps of the show Angel and now Veronica Mars. We also post monthly podcast outtakes, share early extended episode previews, and host monthly live stream watch parties where you can chat with us live.
And we have some new Patreons to shout out, Brian. We've had several join. I'm guessing they're here for Miss Mars.
Thank you.
Thank you to Maya, Lon Laz, Eileen N., Sid Dunn, Jennifer Skinner, Emily Merrick, Sarah, Rebecca Parham, Carmen, Emily Powers, Terry Rivera, Staguli, Lisa Z., and Betty Jo Jivoff.
Thank you so much to all of you.
Yeah, we're happy to have you join us. For more of our content, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, also called Brian and Stacy.
And if you want to support our content, you can do so by making a donation of your choosing via the link found at the bottom of our episode descriptions or in our social media bios.
And if you like what you're hearing, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and we'll give you a shout-out on an upcoming podcast.
What are her boobs like? Like, could she go to the moon or, like, not even that far?
Who's saying that?
Mitchum. Let's go see if we can find something else Mitchum's in. Let's go watch it.
I know. I'm addicted now. We should just do his whole filmography. All right. That'll be the next project, I guess. We just watch everything he's ever been in.
I mean, that's what the fans have been begging us to do. So we'll do
it. The Mitchum Files.
We're not even going to say the dude's name, the actor's name. Just Mitchum.
There's like a conspiracy theory show, too. There's like a true crime element where we try to figure out what he's done.
Thanks for tuning in, guys.
Yeah, this is our soft pitch to any network that happens to be listening. Pick us up.
A lot of networks listen all the way to the end, too.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.